Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Monday, Steve Jones Show here on WKOK. Sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury. Don't forget the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament coming up. And you've got about a month to sign up. Call the Sunbury YMCA and the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA, I should say, for more details. Talk to Bonnie and the folks there. We'll give you more details on that, too, later on this week as far as the tournament. We'll also have the Steve Jones Show live from the Susquehanna Valley Country Club later that day in May. After a busy weekend of college basketball, most everybody's brackets, I'm hearing, are destroyed. I wouldn't use the word destroyed yet, but mine is definitely severely bent at the moment, not necessarily broken.
It's in its usual annual state.
It's not bad. I mean, I lost one Final Four. That's from what I'm hearing from a lot of folks, that's not bad right now. I have 10 in the Sweet 16. That seems to be a good number. I'm very happy with the way things have gone so far.
It's in its annual state of destruction.
And if you tell me you have 16, I will call you a liar. Because I do not believe you had NC State.
I have no idea how many I do have. I haven't
even looked. Yeah, I can't imagine you had NC State beating Villanova.
No, I did not. But I'll say NC State, to its credit, after playing... NC State played to the level of LSU the other night, where it was just all athleticism and like no plan, and they got lulled into playing that game. To their credit, the floor, they were every bit as good as Villanova's guards and just were better up front. And they play, obviously, in a week-in and week-out basis. I don't care if the Big East got six in or not. You and I both know that the ACC is a better caliber of basketball than the ACC. I was never a big believer in the Big 12. I've always said the entire season I thought the ACC was the best conference in the country.
What was the one game that shocked you the most in not from the first 2 days, but the second 2 days of the tournament?
None. I get no shocks from the round of 32. Never.
All right.
No, I don't.
I mean, I know Michigan State surprised
many,
a lot of people.
Times. I've talked about this many, many times. When you get to the round of 32, the field is now remarkably even. I mean, it really is. I mean, an 8 can beat a 1. There's no real... The space between teams becomes exponentially smaller.
I think the one that did surprise me was West Virginia, Maryland. I mean, I know that was a 4-5 game, but I was surprised. I mean, West Virginia, you tried to tell me the other day, West Virginia's solid.
Oh, you bought into the Buffalo thing. Whatever.
I did. I'm not going to deny it.
I don't buy into those things. What really hurt Maryland in the game, pure and simple, was the loss of Melo Trimble. I mean, that's what, in the end, you have to have a guard that can play against that kind of pressure. This is why I think West Virginia-Kentucky will be a good game. I know Kentucky was losing for a period of time against Cincinnati. That didn't surprise me either, again, because you get to this round. It used to be that you could get through the first, if you're an upper seed, you can get through the first two rounds and you're in good shape. If you're one of the top two or three seeds. The talent is so spread out now that you can get, when you get to the second round, the gap is really closed. And Cincinnati played well against Kentucky, led for a period of time. I expect West Virginia and Kentucky to be a really, really good game because of the pressure West Virginia puts on, the fact that the Harrisons are not Phi Beta Kappas in terms of playing the game, and because they have a tendency to play to whatever the other guy's doing. Well, you can't play to the level of what West Virginia does. You can't do it. That's why I think the Euless kid's going to be tremendous for Kentucky in this game. I think he's the biggest key for them because he understands how to play against anything and is a pass-first guy. The Harrisons will try to impose their will on West Virginia, and West Virginia's going to look at him and go, impose what? And that's going to be it. I mean, for John Calipari, that has to be, he doesn't really have any concerns, but that would be on his list of things to impart to them. Hey, look, you're going to have to play the game this way to win. And I'm not sure the Harrisons have the discipline to play that way to win. That's why I think the game against West Virginia up in Cleveland is going to be actually a very, very good game. Very competitive game. Now, there's an interest. What's interesting about the NCAA tournament is I've heard people say, well, the level of basketball, it's just, it's not that great, and blah, blah, blah. This is not the Golden State Warriors against the Cleveland Cavaliers. That's not LeBron over there. That's not Curry. That's not Klay Thompson. That's not Kyrie Irving. Well, I understand that. I got that. Okay? Nor do I expect it to be. What makes these games watchable, exciting, and enjoyable is that there are stakes. It's not a best of seven. It's one shot. And in the second half, man, look, let's face it. We saw stupid basketball all over the place. How many passes did we see this week just on an inbounds pass thrown directly to somebody else? Sit there and go, the dude is standing right there. Why did you throw it there? How many passes did we see against full court pressure thrown to somebody else? Like, what are you doing? And so I saw certainly a level of basketball that was not intelligent at times. There's no question about that. But it also gets down to, look, there's 10 minutes to go and it's a two-point game. You're dialed in now. Who's going to win? Who's going to be eliminated? And that's what makes the tournament so exciting. Is the level of NBA basketball superior? Yeah, of course it is. You know, it's laughable when you hear the old story about, you know, Larry Brown, Kentucky would make the playoffs in the NBA Eastern Conference. No, they wouldn't. Professionals are exactly what they are, professionals. Now, I'm talking about playing an 82-game schedule. Could that team in Kentucky play an 82-game schedule in the NBA? Would they win some games? Yeah, they would win a few games here and there. They wouldn't even remotely come close to making the playoffs. Not even remotely close. If that were the case, why didn't Anthony Davis turn around New Orleans right away? If that were the case, why didn't Michael Kidd-Gilchrist turn around the Charlotte Hornets right away? If that were the case. They didn't. They can't. Look at all the young players the Sixers have. They have Nerlens Noel. Embiid hasn't played yet. But they have Michael Carter-Williams. So, okay. Those are like Michael Carter-Williams and Nerlens Noel would be among the all-stars of their rookie classes. Not good enough together. Simple as that. So it's the stakes of the games and the fact that it's one and done that makes it really exciting. And now we've watched a lot. I give Gonzaga a lot of credit. I had Iowa beating them. I had Michigan State over Virginia. I had Wichita State over Kansas, but I also had Iowa beating Gonzaga. I was not a Gonzaga believer. Just wasn't. I mean, there have been too many years where they exit before. I mean, this is the first time they've been out of the opening weekend since 2009. I think there's some perception out there about, well, Gonzaga's always in the Sweet 16. They're always fighting to get to the Final Four. No. It's the first time they're out of the first weekend since 2009. And that's a big difference.
By the way, calling us in the next half hour, the much-missed Bob Buhner will be joining us on the phone in the next half hour.
Really been missed.
and
Nate, we're going to have Nate Mink from Syracuse.com on today to talk about the Jim Boeheim situation.
And Bob may be able to talk a little bit about the legal side of the Bloomsburg University tweet. Bloomsburg making national news the wrong way lately.
Yes.
Well, at least for a player, at least for a baseball player anyway.
But they suspended him right away. And, you know, it's a private Twitter account, right?
It is. But here's the interesting thing. The player that actually sent the tweet also uses as the picture himself in a Bloomsburg baseball uniform. That did not help the case, I'm sure.
There is no case. It's a personal, individual thing. I mean, it has nothing to do with the university, except they suspended him. He plays baseball for them. Well, he's out. I mean, there's no legality to me in that. After that, I don't see where that even comes into play. Now, for him,
well, I think it's not from the university. I think for him is what I was referring to. I wasn't talking about from the university side.
I think it depends on what she wants to do with it. I think it's up to her. We'll have Nate Minks, statecollege.com, also joining us today to talk about in detail the perspective in Northern New York over Jim Boeheim. Roger joins us. Hi, Roger. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Steve. I just have one question for both you guys, and maybe even some listeners could chime in. But do you think the Bloomsburg player gets thrown off the team, if not for what happened with Curt Schilling and his daughter a few weeks ago? Do you think if it was that incident that put social media in a different light and maybe got Bloomsburg to act a little more quickly and a little more decisively than they otherwise would have? I'll just throw that out there, and then I'll hang up, and you guys can take it from there.
That's an interesting question. I can see why you would ask that question, but I've seen the tweet, and in seeing it, I think it would have brought quick, swift action regardless. I think the Curt Schilling incident certainly brought social media to light, which we talked about extensively. But I think he crossed so many lines in what he tweeted that I think this was I don't think there's any choice, and I don't really think there was a lot. I don't think anybody sat in the room and said, "What do we do about this?" I think the decision was pretty obvious. I don't know what you think, Kevin.
Well, I was actually surprised that they're allowing players to have a Twitter account or at least be even active on a Twitter account because the season really is going on now. And I know a lot of coaches just don't like players being active on Twitter during the season.
And by the way, Monet Davis, do you want to let you know what kind of young woman this is?
This was classy, yeah.
Has asked Bloomsburg to reinstate. Yep. The player.
Bloomsburg did respond, though, by saying, right now we're standing firm.
She said, quote, "Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone deserves a second chance. I know he didn't mean it in that type of way, and I know a lot of people get tired of seeing me on TV, but sometimes you got to think about what you're doing before you actually do it. I know right now he's really hurt, and I know how hard he worked just to get where he is right now." Well, you cannot in any way. She's 14 years old. 14 years old. Castleberry's tweet, which has since been deleted, was in response to the news that the Disney Channel was going to make a movie about her life. Shortly after he sent the tweet, Castleberry's account was deleted, and the university announced that he had been dismissed from the program. I should say she's 13 years old. I think I just made her ineligible for last year's World Series by calling her 14.
Well, she may be 14 now. I'm not sure.
No, she can't be. She's got to be 13 now. She can't be 14 now.
Yeah, I can't remember where the cutoff is anymore. I think it used to be August.
Yeah, it's August 1. Yeah. It's August 1. Yeah, she can't be 14. Now, she could be 13 when she pitched in it in August, but that's beside the point to get off track here.
Right.
But the tweet he put out there was incredibly offensive. I mean, incredibly offensive. And we can't... we can't tell you what he tweeted. I think Roger made a good point. Did the Curt Schilling situation accelerate the decision by Bloomsburg? I'd say maybe, but I've read the tweet and I think it would have, he would have been out regardless.
Oh, I don't think there's any question.
But I think let's take Roger's point and now expand upon it. I've talked about Twitter a number of times. Twitter is like any form of communication or is like any form of social media. I don't care whether it's Facebook, Instagram, whatever. There are marvelous uses for it. How many of you out there have connected with somebody that has fallen out of your life because now you've connected on Facebook? How many of you have been able to send on Instagram pictures to loved ones that in the past you'd have to go get developed, go to the, you know, put them in envelopes, send them out? How great's that been? Twitter's used at news conferences. Okay, you're logged on to the WKOK account. Sarah or Allie, Mark, whomever, goes to a press conference dealing with pick an issue, the Northumberland County prison fire. And courtesy of the WKOK Twitter account, you're getting details on what's going on, what streets are blocked off, where the detours happen to be, things like that. These are all great, great uses for it. Just like there are great uses for the internet. What it does to help me in my job is off the charts. I can find whatever I want, whenever I want. Yet, like anything, there is a bad side to it. This is a bad side. I'm going to throw my opinion about Monet Davis out there. And I mean, first of all, does anybody care what Joey Castleberry's opinion is of Monet Davis? I mean, I didn't really know anybody really cared.
That was the first thing that crossed my mind as well.
And I mean, I don't understand why he cared. And then he put out just an absolutely awful tweet. And they made the move. To her credit, and give her a lot of credit for that. So Twitter is something you need to be careful of. What is the single most important moment in Twitter that must be at the forefront every single time you use it?
You know, it goes through my mind standing right in front of me.
The most important moment is when you sit back and make the decision to hit send. There's a big difference between sitting in your car, for example, and listening to somebody on the radio and going, what the fuck are they really talking about? It? And then all of a sudden, like, you know, 5 minutes later, you're like, yeah, you know what? It really is no big deal. You know, too many people hit send when it comes to expressing. And you also think, oh, I only have 62 followers. I gave you the story about the woman who had made the comments about, what was it about? It was on a plane. And she made a series of comments, about AIDS in Africa. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And she has 170 Twitter followers. Not 170 million, 170. In other words, Kevin's neighborhood. Right? Her plane lands in South Africa. Her phone is exploding. She has no clue why. Because it went viral. 170 through retweeting got to be 1.7 million. She lost her job over it.
I sent out a tweet after Penn State won the bowl game on my own Twitter feed, not realizing the situation, but I saw someone sent me a picture of the Empire State Building, blue and white. I saw a picture on ESPN about using the colors of the two teams playing, but it was from the night before. I tweeted that in honor of the win, they've gone blue and white. Didn't realize that it was for a fallen officer. I got messages and emails from WNBC in New York, who I know don't follow me, to let me know I was wrong.
Right, because that day was the funeral for the officer.
Correct.
In Queens earlier that day, because I remember they had discussed with us about making sure when we traveled that we left earlier because of the traffic.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck and maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks, just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at prettyinsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
Hey, guess what day it is?
Tuesday?
No, it's Hyundai.
Hyundai!
Remember, every day is Hyundai?
Hyundai!
And it's the Lease We Can Do sales event going on now at Sunbury Motors Hyundai.
Hyundai!
The Lease We Can Do is cut the crap and give you low payments and no money down. Lease a 2015 Hyundai Sonata SE for only $237 a month for 36 months with zero down. Zilch. Nada. Or lease a 2015 Hyundai Elantra SE for only $183 a month for 36 months. Again, no money down. Or you could go green. Lease a 2015 Hyundai Sonata Hybrid for $250 a month for 36 months, and you guessed it, zero due at sign. No hidden fees, no plus tax, and blah, blah, blah. It's the lease we can do. These cars are here, these deals are real, and they're only at your home for Hyundai, Sunbury Motors Hyundai,
Hyundai.
In the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, where every day is Hyundai.
Hyundai!
Lease is based on 10,000 miles per year, zero total due at signing with approved HMFR Tier 1 financing tax included. See dealer for complete details.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Back with the Steve Jones Show. Steve in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. This week, we're featuring the Sunbury Motors Hyundai Genesis. Genesis is the Hyundai luxury vehicle without the luxury price. We're talking $8,800 right now off the 2014 Genesis, and it is loaded with great features, including the leather interior, heated seats, as well as the great sound system, and one of the quietest rides you'll find in a vehicle, and it has the Hyundai warranty as well. But you talk about quiet, smooth rides, this one has definitely the luxury you're looking for without the luxury price tag. Check it out at Sunbury Motors. You'll find the Hyundai dealership in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury. And don't forget, right now, Hyundai is also doing the Lease They Can Do sales event. Find out how you can save a lot of money, not only on the Genesis, but some other great Hyundai vehicles, and get that fantastic warranty at Sunbury Motors Hyundai, routes 11 and 15, excuse me, on the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, Ford dealership there as well, and Kia on 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Right near the Susquehanna Valley Country Club. All right, Bob Buehner rejoins us on the show.
Hello, Steve.
Bob, who has saved the show many a day, has an opportunity to do it again here today.
You're not calling from another continent, are you?
No, I'm not in New Zealand right now, but Steve and Kevin, you'll be interested to know that the Cricket World Cup is going on in New Zealand right now. Huge match tonight between New Zealand and South Africa in the semifinals. Tomorrow it'll be India versus Australia. I will be following the wicket by wicket action from down under. So lots going down under. And if I wasn't teaching college, I would certainly be there because, as Steve, you know, I'm a huge cricket fan.
What time are you getting up to watch that?
It's actually Tuesday it starts, but it comes on here 9 p.m. tonight. It'll go about 7 hours.
Is that one game?
One game.
It's a 7-hour game?
That's the short form. The normal game is 5 days. But in what we call knockout cricket, it goes 7-8 hours.
I have an attention deficit disorder for a 2-hour game.
Well, the good news is you take enough beer and a picnic lunch, and you really don't care after the first, like, 3 hours, Steve or Kevin.
All right, let's talk about the tweet for a moment. Is there any legal ramifications here that Bloomsburg needs to be aware of, or that the player himself needs to be aware of because of what he put out there?
I don't think there's any. There's no criminal conduct at issue on behalf of by the actions of the former baseball player at Bloomsburg University. And I don't think there's any legal repercussions, Steve and Kevin, for the university taking the action they did, which is removing him from the team.
Right.
I think it's safe to say there's not a lot of legal issues, but there's lots of issues there.
Roger brought up an interesting question, which I think is worth pondering, and that is whether what happened with Curt Schilling and his daughter help the accelerator to be hit to the floor by Bloomsburg in terms of their quick action. Now, it's only speculation, but what do you think?
I think not. I think what happened
I think they would have done it anyway, yeah.
Yeah, they would have done it anyway, but I don't think they were, when this happened, and remember, it happened on a weekend. It's not like the president and the athletic director are all sitting in her office waiting for something to happen. So I don't think that passed through their mind as they were dealing with this right away. Now, maybe after the fact, somebody said, oh, by the way, Curt Schilling, huh? But I think as they were dealing with it, I think they realized the impact it had on the reputation of really the entire university athletic program, the university in general, let alone this one particular student. So I thought it was incredibly decisive in ways that I've not seen colleges or universities act on a weekend.
All right. Are there any legal ramifications to how someone uses Twitter or the language with which they put out there? Anything? Because this is new territory, obviously, for the legal system.
It is. Although you have to, Steve, revert back to basic legal principles of stalking and harassment, which are, as we know, crimes. It used to be the common form of it was called harassment by communication, was really meant to punish those who overuse the telephone, you know, the repeated hang-ups late at night, the annoying phone calls, the anonymous clicks when people didn't have IDs on their phones, etc. So that was the basis for the law of harassment by communications. The key there is two things. One, it has to be a repeated course of conduct in order to be harassment. A one and done doesn't do it. And two, it has to be of a harassing nature, which means there's no real legitimate purpose behind the phone call or the Twitter. So you just adopt the same rules on a telephone to social media now, and the law is really right where it is, but it's applicable now to all kinds of things.
All right, slightly different, though. Can you commit libel, for example?
Oh, absolutely. In this case, I don't see that as any kind of... I don't think Monet Davis has been...
No, I agree with that, yeah.
She's not been damaged. Has she been libeled in a certain sense? Yeah, but, you know, when you think about it, her response to all of this just enhances her reputation, or another way of saying it could be her value.
Right.
So, but yeah, you can libel somebody on social media just as if you, you know, wrote an put an anonymous or a letter to the editor, so to speak, under your own name. It's the same same principles of law apply, Steve.
All right, so you can do that with social media.
Yes.
When you look at, is there anything in social media now that in the rule of law has made people change their thought as to how the rule of law applies?
Well, the one thing, and I'll turn it slightly and say, with the phone calls of harassment or calling somebody on the phone and making defamatory statements, unless you're tape recording it, which can sometimes be a felony violation of Pennsylvania's wiretap law, the difference is in social media, the evidence never goes away. It's
right
out there for everybody to see. And the only question is not is there evidence available, but can you trace it back to the proper or originating source of the libel, defamation, or harassment? And with computer techies today, that seems to be a problem that's been solved, in large part anyway. So, yeah, the evidence, as a matter of fact, as in this case with the Bloomsburg University baseball player, in short order, his Twitter account went dormant, but people had captured the images for all to see and replicate across the internet. So the evidence does not go away.
Now, as someone who's been associated with Bloomsburg, what was your reaction to seeing Bloomsburg's name attached to this?
Well, it's a good news, bad news thing. I was fortunate to have served as a trustee of Bloomsburg for over 25 years. Five generations of my family have gone to Bloomsburg, so I kind of take this stuff personally. I think the university, with some soul searching, really did the right thing. And even when Ms. Davis came back and said maybe the university ought to reinstate the baseball player, that she forgave him in essence, they stuck by their guns. And if you're going to issue discipline, I think and you think it's the right thing, I don't think you can change your mind, even when a victim says you ought to do something else. There is a deterrent effect, I think, for other similarly inclined people who want to do the same thing on another matter, that maybe now when they understand the consequences, they'll think certainly twice before trying something.
Yeah, because they obviously took care of this as quickly as possible. I don't think they could have really acted any quicker, Bob.
No, Steve, it was stunning the speed at which they acted on this one. And I think in this day and age where the media is instantaneous, you know, this story has long legs across the U.S. this morning, all across the internet media sources that I read, whether it's the Philly Inquirer Online or Penn Live, Fox News, it was all over the internet, and with Bloomsburg's name attached to it. So the implications for Bloomsburg not acting would be incredibly serious, but the reaction I have seen is one of praising the university for, as you said, promptly responding,
right,
and doing it. You know, they didn't kick the kid out of school, but...
No.
I did some background checking. This fellow was a high school baseball star in Methacton High School, which is in Montgomery County in the Philadelphia suburbs. He was a highly touted out-of-high-school player. So it wasn't some guy that was sitting on the end of the bench who may never get in a game that did this. This was one of their stars. And I don't think they had any other choice.
No, I don't think they had any other choice either. And what's interesting is I think Roger brought up the Curt Schilling incident,
mm-hmm,
about his daughter on Twitter. That's applicable except there's one that's far more applicable to me, and that's what Oklahoma did with the fraternity so quickly last week.
Oh, yeah.
Where they kicked them all out after the video. I think that's a case where you can really... Now, one may be social media, but the other one also is a viral video that's social media, too. And Bloomsburg handled it the same way as David Bourne did at Oklahoma.
That's right. And, you know, Steve, I was thinking as I was reading this morning, something you had said, I think, when Bill O'Brien was coaching the football team at Penn State, that, boy, this social media is a dangerous thing in the wrong hands. And
yep.
Coaches need to address that issue, and they need to do it in a very firm and clear way to all their athletes, because one kid, as we know with a Twitter, can really disgrace an entire team, if not an entire university. And no one will remember the kid's name, but they'll remember the university he's associated with. And, you know, I don't know that 3 years ago coaches in any sport grasped the seriousness or the dangerousness of the social media.
In fact, the Miami Dolphins at one point, and I'm going back 3 years ago, actually checked that 4 years ago, banned social media in training camp. I think you see now, Coach, well, except now I think you're seeing more and more coaches on the college level, I'll speak for that, that are allowing their players to use social media. But I think that what the key is, they're monitoring it so closely because, A, you don't want information getting out about practice, let alone something like this happens that's completely off the reservation.
Well, you know, the big thing with the NFL, Steve, was, and I'm sure it's true with college football, but reports of injuries, because
right.
As you and I both know, and we're not naive, people bet on the outcomes of sporting events. And,
right.
And information about injuries can have a profound effect on a betting line, let's just say. And I think that's one of the reasons why the NFL goes to such precautions when it comes to reporting injuries. And if somebody tweets out, oh, Tom Brady twisted his knee in practice on Thursday afternoon, people are going to be calling up their bookies in Vegas and getting bets on that game as fast as they can. And that's not a good thing for sports.
And that's why the NFL, frankly, goes out and says probable, questionable, doubtful, out.
Yeah.
And that's the reason they do it, is because of the betting lines. That's why they've required everybody to do it.
You know,
for the reason you just talked about.
Yeah, Stephen, it's interesting, but I think that down the road it may come to that for college football as well, not just in football but basketball, because there is that social media, and it is instantaneous, and, you know, you can get a Twitter from somebody that so-and-so is hurt, and you can get a bet down real fast these days. You know, it's just as instantaneous on the betting line as it is on the Twitter line.
Well, I think what's happening now is that you're seeing coaches allow players to use Twitter, but at the same time, they're also letting them know in no uncertain terms that everything they tweet is being monitored closely by the coaching staff, and that there will be repercussions if there's anything that crosses a line. I think they want to allow them to be have the adult freedom to use it, but I think they put so many restrictions on it. They're forcing them to use it responsibly.
Steve, I think if it's not already happening, I think there will become a day when the first day of training camp contains a 2-hour lecture on how to use social media responsibly at X university or Y football team in the NFL, et cetera, because there are incredible pitfalls. It's dangerous. On the other hand, that's how people communicate today. How many times have we seen in the NCAA tournament pictures of the crowd where people are on their cell phones twittering away or instantaneous messaging people? Who knows?
And it's a primary way of communication, and I completely understand that. I think what's happened, though, is that it cannot just be... Here's a prime example. It cannot just be someone at Penn State getting all the football players in a room and saying, okay, here's how you deal with the media. Here's how you responsibly use social media. Here's how you responsibly use Twitter. It can't just be Penn State football, because Joey Castleberry has now shown the entire country that at Bloomsburg, you better use it properly as well, or else there'll be consequences.
No question. And this could have been a huge black eye for an entire university, except that it was handled, and I think that's the other part of it, is that's why you saw such an instantaneous reaction from a university administration and athletic department, because the speed of social media does not wait until Monday morning when an athletic director shows up at his office or a president goes into a cabinet meeting with his chief officers to talk about a problem and to have time to sort it out. No one has the luxury of time in dealing with the social media, because now the real media, the press, if you will, they're monitoring everybody's Twitters.
Yes, they are. There's no question about that. And again, I think an even greater influence than the Curt Schilling handling of it was actually the handling by David Bourne in Oklahoma of the fraternity on campus. Bloomsburg seemed to take that as their cue as to how to handle it.
I think that's one of those things where, you know, you can't rely on any real precedent of 5 years ago or 5 months ago, because this stuff is evolving rapidly. And I don't, you know, obviously it's the first time a major university in central Pennsylvania has had to deal with something like this, but I have a feeling that the other 13 universities in the state system are taking high note of what happened at Bloomsburg. And, it, you know, it comes out of, using a baseball analogy, it comes out of left field when you're least expecting it. There was no baseball going on. There wasn't anything of any special event. And all of a sudden, a Twitter about a little leaguer from Philadelphia, and oh my goodness, you get consumed by it, having to defend your university and its reputation.
You may have 5 or 6 followers. You'd be amazed how quickly it goes worldwide.
Absolutely.
Bob, thanks so much. Appreciate the time very much.
Good to talk to you, Steve. Good to see you, Kevin.
Great chat with you, Bob. Thanks.
Bye.
All right. Next half hour, we'll have Nate Mink, Syracuse.com, and Jim Boeheim as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. A reminder, the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament taking place on Wednesday, May 6th, Susquehanna Valley Country Club. We'll broadcast our show out there. We look forward to having you on board. And on top of that, we are encouraging you strongly to get yourself and your foursome into the tournament, which has turned out to be a bigger and bigger success every year. And we will do our show live, which has brought with it cat calls to Kevin every year from every foursome.
Those are the foursomes, though, that pick the afternoon so they could avoid getting into my range of the golf ball.
Your range?
Yeah, range.
Oh.
I mean, if you're on the left or the right, of the hole to the left or the hole to the right of the hole I'm playing, it is in the danger zone.
All I know is last year I had to go in and they made me sign something. Like, you have to be kidding me.
I hit it. I just don't know where it's going.
No, something about we can't sue the club when you hit it. I don't know what that means.
It's for my safety and the club.
We didn't mean to put a railing over the bridge. Oh, okay.
If it's there, I'll hit it.
All right, Jim Boeheim, next half hour, we'll be talking with Nate Mink from Syracuse.com and to get his feel for the Boeheim press conference last week and what did and did not happen up there. It's also interesting, and on top of that, the president came out today and he has come out against compensation for college athletes. He said it would lead to a bidding war and ruin the sense of college sports. He says the NCAA and coaches make huge amount of money. He's not crazy about that. While an athlete gets banished after a tattoo or free use of a car. He says that's unfair. Made the comment, by the way, in the Huffington Post. When he was asked whether college athletes should be compensated because they are moneymakers for the NCAA TV stations and advertisers. It's one thing about the NCAA tournament. There's a lot of talk about the money made. Where does the money go? So you think field hockey supports itself?